Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of the News Roundtable. My name's Quake, joined in studio by Scott Hardy from the WTAD Newsroom and Steve Bohl at his assigned seat, pressing the buttons, making sure everything sounds fantastic, waiting for a call from Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints.com. He'll be joining us on the back half of the show to talk about the next city that has thrown the intercept law flag towards Comptroller Mendoza in Springfield. We'll clue you in as to which city that is. And further, the conversation on is this going to start picking up? And what if there is a fiscal downturn in the markets? Will all of a sudden more firefighter and police pension groups across the state start asking for the state to intercept money on behalf of their funds, and what will that mean for their cities? And we'll look back to what Harvey has done, what North Chicago has done, in referencing this latest Illinois city to have the intercept law thrown their way. So we'll get into that on the back half of today's show. But first things first, in with all the latest from the WTAD Newsroom, say good morning to Scott Hardy.
Good morning, Quay. Good morning, everybody. A new program to teach Adams County High School seniors on how to be entrepreneurs will start at the beginning of the next school year. That announcement Wednesday came from Adams County CEO, or Creating Entrepreneurial Opportunities. It's designed to be a year-long program developed by the Midland Institute for High School Seniors. The statement says that the program is designed to utilize partnerships that provide an overview of business development and processes. The plan is for local business community partners to work with Adams County High Schools to create what CEO calls project-based experiences for students. Businesses would provide funding, expertise, meeting space, business tours, and one-on-one mentoring. Adams County CEO began as a result of the Quincy Next Strategic Plan and its initiative to expand entrepreneurship and new economy skills training. According to CEO, there's no cost to students or schools. All seven Adams County high schools have signed on to take part. Students will receive two high school credits. Board of directors made up of area business, community, and educational leaders has been created. They're now looking for private investment for the program. Ongoing financial support is needed to pay for a part-time facilitator and operations expenses. KHQA-TV's Chad Douglas has an update on Quincy's Klingner Trail.
In Quincy News, the 18th to 24th Street Klingner Trail Edition is now one step closer to completion. Crews paved the asphalt trail on Tuesday. The edition's completion has been moved up to the end of October. It was originally set to be finished in December. The trail is expected to span 2 miles in length with two bridges over Cedar Creek. Local support and donations to Friends of the Trails made these additions possible. If you're interested in helping the project along, visit friendsofthetrails.org.
Thank you, Chad. An 18-year-old Canton, Missouri man suffered minor injuries after losing control of his pickup Tuesday afternoon. According to the Missouri State Highway Patrol, Carson Lay was southbound on Missouri 81, about 4 miles north of Canton, when a northbound horse pulling a buggy got spooked and then swerved into the path of the truck. Lay's pickup ran off the right side of the roadway and hit a culvert. He was taken to Blessing Hospital. Neither the horse nor the driver of the buggy, 19-year-old Susie Borntrigger, were hurt in that accident. A Hannibal man accused of trying to rob a Hannibal bank in mid-April with a hammer is pleading guilty in a settlement with prosecutors and will avoid prison. Gary Haynes Sr. was in Marion County Circuit Court earlier this week where he pleaded guilty to one count of unlawful use of a weapon. As part of a settlement, Haynes then received a 4-year suspended prison sentence and 5 years probation. Prosecutors said that the incident happened just before 3 p.m. on April 19th at the F&M Bank at 5th and Broadway. Haynes admitted being in the bank and wielding a hammer while demanding money. Police arrested him a short time later outside the bank in the 500 block of Broadway. No one was hurt in that incident. And a Keokuk woman who's admitted to committing insurance fraud has been sentenced to probation. Heather Palmisano was recently in South Lee County District Court, where she was sentenced to 5 years probation and a $750 fine. Palmisano pleaded guilty in August to one count of insurance fraud. She admitted presenting false information on an insurance form. She and her husband, David, were charged in mid-February after an investigation started last year by the Iowa Insurance Division's Fraud Bureau. The division says the Palmisanos submitted fraudulent insurance claims in December 2017 and again in March 2018, seeking payment through their policy. David Palmisano faces two counts of insurance fraud and one count of theft. He's due to go on trial in November. He is currently free on bond. That is a look at the latest in local news for you on this Thursday morning. Of course, we will have much more news for you, including an update on the latest in drought conditions, which I would think after this weekend should be, if not totally alleviated, that helped that much more.
The northern parts of the WTAD listening area are looking forward to that rain.
They certainly are. Now, the forecast that I've seen as of this morning is 1 to 3 inches in southeast Iowa and areas to the north. Quincy Hannibal area, we're looking at 3 to 4. Central Missouri could see 4 to 6 inches.
Wow.
Yeah, and that is between, they say, starting Friday night, but especially Saturday night and through the day on Sunday.
And this is because of the depression that just landed in Houston?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. It's 10:13. We'll take a timeout, and when we come back, we're waiting on a phone call from Ted Dabrowski from Wire Points to talk about the latest Illinois city to enact, or latest Illinois city to have the intercept law enacted upon it by its firefighters' pension fund, and what that means for cities, and ultimately what this whole financial thing is doing to the housing markets and furthering problems here in the land of Lincoln. We'll get into that next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
Welcome back to the News Roundtable. You know, as you keep fading that down, Steve, you could fade me up, too. Work that balance.
I don't need to fade you. You're right there.
Maybe there's something wrong in my headset, like the speaker here in the studio. Welcome back to the News Roundtable. Pay no attention to our technical peccadillos. By the way, who had East St. Louis next to enact the intercept law? Yeah, go and collect your jar of hard candies at the front desk. We welcome Ted Dabrowski to his assigned seat at the News Roundtable. He's got a new piece up at wirepoints.com this morning labeling East St. Louis the third domino to fall per the state of Illinois and Comptroller Susana Mendoza when it comes to the intercept law. What are the firefighters looking for, Ted?
Well, the firefighters have seen their pension fund not be funded for a long time, and they're very concerned that East St. Louis is going to run out of money. So what they did is they've gone to the state comptroller, told her that the city has failed to put in what they're supposed to put in the last couple of years, and they demanded that the state comptroller, you know, garnish, you know, confiscate some of the city money and put it into the pension funds, about $2.2 million worth. And in East St. Louis, that's a lot of money. That's a city that's scrambling to keep things together. It has millions in deficits now. And when the state comptroller takes that money away, you got to wonder what's going to happen to the jobs of ordinary workers at the city who might not get paid.
Right. You have a situation where in Harvey last year, when the intercept law was enacted, the city had to start laying off firefighters and then police officers because the police were right behind the firefighters and throwing the flag on the intercept law. If they start laying off those firefighters, essentially you get to that conversation of, is the city, because it has to, choosing pensions over the safety of its citizens?
Yeah, I think what it's showing is, and Harvey proved it, and I'd argue that it would happen across the state, if cities were forced to pay the current salaries of their workers and at the same time fully fund the pensions that they owe, they couldn't do it, and they'd have to start firing people. They'd be forced to choose, do we want to have active workers, you know, stay in their jobs and not fund the pensioners, or do we want to meet our obligations to the pensioners and fire our workers? And, you know, that's a really ugly scenario, especially if you're in a place like East St. Louis, man. It needs firefighters. It needs policemen. It's already bad enough there in, you know, the crime, et cetera, that, you know, without them, you know, I think you'll see even more flight from the city.
Our guest this morning, Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints.com. East St. Louis firefighters have asked Comptroller Susana Mendoza to enact the intercept law because they say they're owed over $2 million in funding to their pension funds. Are we at a situation now in Illinois where Susana Mendoza or whomever may be the comptroller moving into the future would start the negotiations as far as coming to a deal like Harvey did as soon as the firefighters or police officers, whomever, wants the intercept law enacted and not have to go through the process of laying off city workers to then have to put together a deal?
Well, you know, this problem is huge, and you know, if Mendoza starts doing that and the economy, the national economy, the stock market ever goes south, you know, this would become a full-time job for her. Of the 650 pension funds in Illinois, the downstate pension funds, about 301 didn't get fully funded last year. So that means that in theory, right, and there's, you know, a lot of debate about how all this plays out, but in theory, you could have, you know, hundreds of pension funds asking Mendoza for intercepts, and that would be chaos. And it wouldn't be surprising in a situation where you see the economy slow down at some point and stock market hits come along. These pension funds would be in trouble, and they would be forced to use the intercept to get funding from cities. So it could be chaos, and that's why we call it a domino. You know, the state controls all the pension laws. Cities have no ability to control their own pensions, and the Constitution is protecting those pensions too. So once this thing starts falling apart, it could be a domino effect where trustees from pension funds around the state start asking for intercepts.
Yeah, this happened on Tuesday. The firefighters in East St. Louis asked Comptroller Mendoza to enact the intercept law on Tuesday. That same day, you guys at WirePoints put out a piece about Moody's, saying that Illinois obviously is the worst in the nation by far when it comes to pension debts, and the number I'm going to throw out there is 505%. Explain that number and why it's so much larger than every other state in the union.
Yeah, so what Moody's did, and Moody's is the rating agency, you know, they're the ones that look at the best run states in terms of their credit, in terms of their finances. They look at the worst run states, and Illinois is at the bottom of the barrel by far. They looked at many metrics, but one of the metrics they looked at was how much debt is there relative to the amount of taxes each state raises every year. And, you know, a place like Iowa, they have pension debt that's about half of their tax base every year. In our case, it was five times the tax base, and no other state was even close to us. You know, Kentucky was three times its tax base. But most states are, you know, around 100% or one times. So we are the extreme outlier. We're the financial deadbeats compared to how much debt we have, and it's why we have so much trouble across the state. And what it tells us is that our politicians are just ignoring a problem that becomes more and more massive, and it shows up every day in people's wallets, in people's home values, in people's tax rates.
So you have a situation where you have leadership essentially, like you say, ignoring it, not acknowledging the truth of the matter. But you can't do that forever. And I thought it was encouraging. You finished up the Tuesday piece about Moody's by saying the silver lining is things can't go on. Things that can't go on forever don't. And meaning eventually you can't ignore this forever, and you're going to have to address it and make changes in Springfield. Is it going to take a city like Peoria, someplace that big, for Springfield?
Or maybe Chicago?
certainly. You can't ignore Chicago. But I was even thinking, would Peoria end up in that situation before Chicago? Obviously, you can't ignore Chicago, but would it take some place like the size of Peoria for the legislators to finally acknowledge the reality of the situation?
Well, I think it might, or it would. Yeah, I think the sad thing first I want to say is that, you know, these guys don't care about East St. Louis. They don't care about Harvey, these politicians. They're too small. They're in too much trouble, but they can politically, Springfield can ignore East St. Louis. It would be much harder to ignore, like you said, a Peoria or certainly a Chicago. And it's going to take, I think, you know, they're not doing anything. They think that a progressive tax is their panacea to everything. It's not true. That will only make things worse. They're running out of options, and that's why I think that, you know, that last statement I made is that things that can't go on forever don't. There's a chance that the pressure becomes so big from all over the state, not just in East St. Louis, but Peoria, Chicago, Rockford, Danville, that once the politicians run out of options, once they can't kick anymore, once they can't keep raising taxes, there's only going to be there's going to be two solutions left. Allow the state to fall into just chaos, or what will be more politically expedient is to finally do reforms. And so that's the silver lining. Things are getting so bad that at some point guys like Madigan will wake up and say, you know, I don't really have a choice anymore. I've got to address this issue.
Now, when you say addressing the issue, what's the likelihood instead of enacting adjustments here at the state level that they would turn to the federal government and say, you need to come in and bail us out?
Well, there's always that chance. And, you know, Governor Quinn tried that when Obama was in office. Obviously, Madigan will not find a receptive ear in Trump, right? The Trump will say, you know, go away. But you never know how things change in Congress and at the White House level. So I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they try that. But I think you have to remember there's a whole bunch of states that are well-run that have taken on pension reform. They're not going to want to bail out Illinois. They're not going to want to bail out California. So I guess at that point it would be a big battle between, you know, those who are well-run versus those who have their hands out for, you know, for bailouts. And I don't think that the weak states would win. I think the strong states that are well-run would say, no way.
Sure, money talks. You've got a five-point plan to address the issue here in the state. Can you run through those 5 points for us?
Sure. You know, the one that's missing here is end corruption, but I can't put that on there because I don't know how to do that, right? But so we'll ignore that one. But, you know, we have to get the moral culture, you know, correct again, and that's things like fair maps and term limits and things like that. But if you want to get to the financial piece of it, look, there's no reforming pensions without amending the Constitution that allows us to change or delete the Pension Protection Clause. Only then can we reform pensions going forward, and that's the key. Number two, then, is to convert these pensions, defined benefits, to a defined contribution plan like most of the people in the private sector have, 401k-style plans that are out there. Number three is you got to freeze these cost of living adjustments, these guaranteed raises that pensioners get, 3% compounded annually. That's not affordable anymore. That's a key to getting the finances back under control. Number four, you've got to take away the power of the unions over the power of the people. In any collective bargaining labor agreement negotiation, the unions have all the power and the people have none. And you know, an example of that would be that Illinois allows its teachers to strike, but none of our neighboring states allow teachers to strike. Why do we give our unions that much power over the people? We have to end that. And the last is, you know, you've got to have the ability to have municipal bankruptcy in Illinois. Places like Peoria or Rockford or others that are not in deepest trouble as East St. Louis could use bankruptcy to avoid the problems that any St. Louis has. Bankruptcy for East St. Louis is too late. It's the same thing for Harvey. But without that power, these cities may never have a chance at a fresh start to reorganize their debts and then start to grow again and attract people again. So that kind of captures overall what we want to do.
And all of those five things seem logical, but they're very difficult conversations to have in Springfield. I'm curious, very quickly, because I'm running short on time, have you talked with any of the union leadership of the five public unions in the state of Illinois? And if you have, are they in denial about the financial situation of the state, or do they understand where we're headed as well? And would they be agreeable to sitting down and working something out?
No. So number one, the five things I just said, you know, Madigan will not touch those today, nor will the unions. they still believe that things like tax hikes, bailouts, something is going to solve the problem. So they're still hanging on to that. So I'm not naive to think that right now the things I mentioned would get passed. But what I do believe is that once you start having places, you know, bigger than East St. Louis, but Peoria, the Chicago Police and Fire Pension Funds are bankrupt. Once you start having real problems there, the solutions I mentioned will start to rise higher in the chain of or in the possibilities of change. But it won't happen until we get a crisis. They're gonna try to hang on to any kind of can kicks and bailouts to keep things going.
All right, I would point our listeners towards wirepoints.com to check out today's piece. Plus, check out the last few pieces for over the last week that tie all of this together. Ted Dabrowski, you're always a breath of fresh air. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
That is
the News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow, 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.